Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's reading of USA Today. Today being April 12th, this is their weekend edition, so it also covers April 12th through the 14th. Front page, has your health data been exposed? 144 million Americans hit by record breaches in 2023. More than 144 million Americans' medical information was stolen or exposed last year in a record-breaking number of healthcare data breaches, a USA Today analysis of Health and Human Services data found. After breaking records in 2023, the most significant breach hit in February when a ransomware attack targeted Change Healthcare, the nation's largest healthcare payment system, owned by United Health Group. The company handles a third of all patient records and processes 15 billion healthcare transactions a year. That's according to an HHS letter. The COVID-19 pandemic accelerated the use of remote and third-party technologies, making the healthcare ecosystem more interconnected and vulnerable to cyber attacks, said John Ridgey, National Advisor for Cybersecurity and Risk for the American Hospital Association. These technologies can help deliver care to patients wherever they are, but they also give hackers broader access to healthcare systems and records. Since 2019, data breaches targeting third-party vendors contracted by hospitals have more than tripled, growing at a significantly faster rate compared to attacks aimed directly at traditional healthcare providers, USA Today's analysis of HHS data showed. The bad guys have figured it out, Ridgey said. They realized, why hack 1,000 hospitals when I can hack the one common business associate and get all the data? Cyber attacks on hospitals disrupt patient care and pose risk to patient safety. Surgeries are canceled or rescheduled. Patients and ambulances get diverted. Patients' protected health information and personally identifiable information are exposed. When clearinghouses and healthcare payment systems are targeted, billing and payment issues can persist for months. It's just going to get worse, said Errol Weiss, Chief Security Officer at the Health Information Sharing and Analysis Center. Cyber attacks aren't uniquely a healthcare problem, but the industry is a major target because of the abundance of financially valuable personal information, said Lee Kim, Senior Principal of Cybersecurity and Privacy at the Healthcare Information and Management Systems Society. Hacking incidents are the most common type of health data breach, accounting for more than half of the cases going back to 2009. Ransomware attacks are becoming more common, we said, where cyber criminals demand large sums of money to restore access to sensitive medical data. The healthcare industry is affected by ransomware attacks more than any other critical infrastructure sector. That's according to a 2023 Internet Crime Report by the FBI. Compared with other sectors, healthcare is more inclined to pay because ultimately lives are at stake, Weiss said. It's a self-serving prophecy, he said, because organizations are paying the ransoms. We're seeing a very expected evolution in the increase in the number of attacks. Not all hospitals and healthcare organizations have enough money, technology, and staff to protect themselves, Ridgey said. The healthcare sector is woefully behind when it comes to resourcing cybersecurity and information security, Weiss said. We're really playing catch-up. Before the Change ransomware attack, the largest health data breach occurred in 2015, when nearly 79 million Americans' protected health information was exposed in an attack against health insurance giant Anthem, now named Elevance Health. Anthem agreed to pay $16 million to the HHS's Office for Civil Rights 3 years later, the largest settlement of its kind. In 2023, HCA Healthcare, which operates 182 hospitals and thousands of healthcare facilities across 20 states, experienced the third largest health data breach overall and the largest of the year. The attack compromised the personal information of more than 11 million patients. The incident involved an external storage location, but no clinical information, payment details, or other sensitive information such as passwords or social security numbers were compromised. Harlow Summerford, a spokesperson for the Nashville, Tennessee-based company, wrote that in an emailed statement. Asked whether HCA has plans to enhance its security posture, Summerford said the company does not publicly discuss the details of security measures as part of the company's overall protection strategy. Following the Change Healthcare incident, lawmakers and regulators have directed increased attention toward proposing measures to safeguard healthcare organizations and ensure their financial stability, said Tom Leary, Senior Vice President and Head of the Government Relations at the Healthcare Information and Management Systems Society. Some hospitals and healthcare organizations have also been increasing their cybersecurity budgets to better guard themselves against future attacks, Leary said, citing a 2023 cybersecurity survey report. This is a shared responsibility, Ridgie said. Hospitals know we need to do our part to be better prepared to defend against and respond to attacks, but that alone will not solve the healthcare sector cyber crisis. In a related article, your medical records have been exposed. Now what? Exposure of protected health information and personally identifiable information can put patients at risk of identity theft or insurance fraud. Be careful not to share sensitive information over email, text messages, or other communication paths that might not be so secure, said Errol Weiss, Chief Security Officer at the Health Information Sharing and Analysis Center. Here are the steps you can take if your personal health data has been exposed. This is according to guidance by the Federal Trade Commission. So how do you know if your data has been breached? Federal law requires healthcare organizations to report to Health and Human Services any security breaches that expose patient information. USA Today provides a searchable database for healthcare data breaches at data.usatoday.com. Search by company name, breach type, or company location to see if your health information has been compromised. And what if it has been? Enroll in identity and credit monitoring services. Contact the three major nationwide credit bureaus if your Social Security number has been stolen. Federal law allows you to obtain a free copy of your credit report every year from each of the three nationwide bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. Review your credit report for any unauthorized accounts or inquiries and report any suspicious activity to the credit reporting company. Visit annualcreditreport.com to order your free annual credit reports. You can also call toll-free 1-877-322-8228 or send in a request form by mail. And look for signs of medical identity theft. Be on the alert for bills for medical services you didn't receive. Contact your insurance provider right away if you notice fraudulent charges or debts. If the charges involve Medicare or Medicaid coverage, file a report online or call 1-800-HHS-TIPS and report suspicious activity. If you find suspicious activity on your credit reports, contact your local law enforcement agency and file a police report. Keep a copy of the police report as it may be required by creditors to clear you of any fraudulent debts. You may also file an identity theft report with the FTC and report any phishing messages or calls using your stolen medical information to the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center. Up next from today's edition of USA Today for April 12th, House GOP in chaos after conservatives tank vote on FISA, F-I-S-A. Trump sinks step to renew surveillance bill. This in Washington by Ken Tran and Riley Began. Just days after returning from a two-week recess, right-wing fury spurred on by former President Trump brought the House to a standstill in a significant blow to House Speaker Mike Johnson as he grapples with a threat to his leadership post. 19 House Republicans shot down a procedural step known as a rule vote in the House on a controversial spying law that has renewed GOP infighting. The move effectively froze the House and left the legislation in a state of limbo. In the days leading up to the vote, House Republicans were confident they could take the lead on renewal of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, and pass it this week. But it quickly became apparent that several conservative hardliners, furious at Johnson and accusing leaders of leaving their voices out, were angling to shut down the bill. Trump also told Republicans early Wednesday to kill FISA in an 11th-hour post on Truth Social, emboldening conservative opposition to Johnson's reapproval plan. All this was happening as Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene dangles a motion to vacate over Johnson's head. It's an effort that, if passed, would boot him from the speakership. Greene's move, alongside the open rebellion in the House vote, underscores the growing frustration at Johnson from conservatives who say the Speaker isn't fighting hard enough for them. One of the conservatives who derailed FISA, Representative Andy Ogles, told USA Today that frustration within hard right ranks has reached a point that it's not clear Johnson would survive an effort to oust him, calling the House fickle. Johnson sought to sell the plan to reauthorize the surveillance legislation in a meeting Wednesday morning and touted other reforms to FISA, stressing its importance as advocates said it was essential to national security. Those efforts, however, proved futile. Trump's foray into the debate Wednesday appeared to be the final nail in the coffin for House GOP leaders' FISA plans. Representative Matt Gaetz, a supporter of changing the legislation, said Wednesday morning that the former president was right and that his comments helped their cause. Asked whether Trump's message influenced any votes in the House, Senator J.D. Vance from Ohio quipped, "That certainly didn't hurt." Johnson said this week that he intends to speak with the former president and defended his plan, arguing the effort to renew FISA already includes swaths of reforms and gives the law real teeth to address abuses. Johnson will have his chance to speak with Trump in person just days after the former president's comments appeared to plunge the House into chaos. The speaker is slated to deliver a joint news conference with Trump at Mar-a-Lago on election integrity. Representative Troy Nels, a Trump loyalist who often defends Johnson, lamented that the speaker has an impossible job and agreed with the sentiment that Trump's comments probably contributed to the paralysis. But when asked if he would listen to Trump over Johnson, Nels didn't hesitate. "Oh yes," he said, "if Speaker Johnson ain't getting advice from Donald Trump, he's missing a lot." Next up, new rules take aim at gun show loophole. The Biden administration will take steps this week to crack down on unlicensed dealers selling firearms that bleed into the illegal market. Under current rules, licensed dealers must perform background checks and log the make, model, and serial numbers of guns sold, but hobbyists and infrequent traders don't. Justice Department officials say too many guns are being sold under the so-called gun show loophole and internet loophole. The new rules more clearly define who should join the 80,000 other federal firearms licensees and abide by existing law. The expected result? At least 20,000 additional gun sellers will now be required to perform the instant background checks that will stop them from selling to felons, domestic abusers, and other prohibited buyers. Even a single firearm transaction may be sufficient to require a license. That's according to the rule, if there is other behavior to suggest commercial activity. The regulations clarify a new standard for which sellers are engaged in the business and thus need to perform background checks. The rule was part of the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act signed in 2022 and an executive order last year. They take effect 30 days after being published in the Federal Register, Justice Department officials told reporters this week. And the new standard draws the line at those who sell, quote, predominantly to earn a profit. It provides key indicators as examples. If a gun seller uses merchant services like a credit card reader or frequently rents space at a gun show or repetitively acquires and sells firearms, that person is considered a dealer and must now do background checks. The new rule does provide exceptions. Bona fide collectors can sell some of their inventory, for example. Guns can be given as gifts to family members. Personal sales tied to a hobby like hunting or sport shooting are carved out in the rules. The rules for gun dealers have always applied to those who are, quote, engaged in the business. The question has been what that phrase means. The former standard defined a dealer as someone who sold for profit and livelihood. Gun control groups and Democrats have called for the government to define engaged in the business by the number of sales, such as 5 in a year. Instead, officials settled on the predominantly earns a profit language, but added specific examples that help identify dealers. The CDC report warns of a spike in measles cases across the U.S. Nearly a third of all U.S. measles cases in the past 4 years happened during a three-month stretch in 2024. That's according to a report from the CDC. The rise in measles, a highly infectious virus, is troubling. Officials attribute it to the drop in the U.S. vaccination rate for the deadly and preventable virus amid a global surge in cases. For now, the risk of widespread transmission remains low due to existing immunity and robust public health responses to contain outbreaks. That's according to the report published on Thursday. The CDC documented nearly 340 measles cases since January of 2020. Almost 100 of the infections happened in 2024 prior to March 28th, with cases occurring in more than a dozen states. Since then, there have been more than a dozen cases as of April 4th that aren't included in the report. Most of the outbreaks we've seen during this period have been small and short, due to high population immunity and rapid response by state and local health departments to control these outbreaks, said Adria Mathis, a study author and the CDC's lead epidemiologist for measles surveillance. Measles was once thought to be a disease of the past. Public health officials in 2000 declared measles eliminated in the U.S., after decades of people getting vaccinated, which are highly effective at preventing the virus. While vaccines are still widely used, Mathis said the report notes that more measures must be taken to curb the rise in cases and prevent further transmission within the U.S. Many Americans have chosen not to vaccinate their children, which CDC officials said contributed to recent outbreaks of cases. The nationwide measles, mumps, and rubella vaccination rate among American kindergartners is around 93%, below the 95% goal thought to provide adequate protection against measles. And the median age of a measles patient is 3. About 90% of recent cases were in patients who weren't vaccinated or those for whom vaccination status was unknown. New measles cases tend to primarily be caused by lack of vaccinations and an uptick in travel after the pandemic. The CDC report confirmed nearly all cases were introduced from abroad by people entering the U.S., primarily from other areas that the World Health Organization defines as the Eastern Mediterranean and African regions. The nation's largest outbreak in 2024 occurred at a Chicago migrant shelter, and city officials have identified over 60 cases so far. Local health officials have said it likely spread through local transmission. Cases haven't been linked to international travel, including among people who recently crossed the southern U.S. border, the city's top health official said in March. U.S. residents traveling abroad accounted for 2/3 of imported cases, and the report said that imported cases were likely underreported. Now, from the money section of today's USA Today, low-paid workers see raise in pay. Hourly pay rose by 12.1% between 2019 and 2023. Wages rose much faster for America's lowest-paid workers than for their better-paid colleagues between 2019 and 2023, a new report says, a striking reversal after four decades of widening wage inequality. Hourly pay rose by 12.1% in those years for low-wage Americans, from $12.06 to $13.52, boosted by policy decisions that aided those workers during the pandemic, according to a report from the left-leaning Economic Policy Institute. In the same span, hourly wages grew by 0.9% for the highest earners, from $57.30 to $57.84 an hour. The study compared wages across incomes, adjusting for inflation. It found the highest growth among workers in the 10th percentile for income, meaning that 9/10 of workers earned more. The slowest wage growth came at the high end of the pay scale, represented by workers in the 90th percentile for earnings. The trend is significant, the report says, because the wage gap between low and high income Americans had been growing for the previous 40 years. The current business cycle is a notable reversal of fortune for lower wage workers in the U.S. labor market, the report states. And will the trend continue? Well, that depends on several variables, including the federal government's willingness to cut interest rates and to raise the national minimum wage. According to the Institute's analysis, the data illustrate that Congress and the Trump and Biden administrations responded to the pandemic with policy moves that, quote, made a real difference in people's lives. Wages grew for those who needed it most. Other economists disagree. The pandemic-era economic bailout sparked the worst inflation in four decades, they contend. Despite the wage growth, low-income workers now face rising debt and dwindling savings. Congress approved trillions of dollars in pandemic relief at the pandemic's height, dispatching stimulus checks, enhanced jobless benefits, and other aid. By one argument, those funds saved low-wage workers from poverty and delivered them into a more favorable labor market. By another argument, the federal government effectively shut down its own economy and then set up relief programs that discouraged idle workers from returning. Now on to USA Today Sports. This by Josh Peter. O.J. Simpson dies of cancer at 76. O.J. Simpson, the football star and actor whose life took a shocking turn when he was accused of stabbing to death his ex-wife and a man who was with her the night of the killings, died Wednesday of prostate cancer at the age of 76. That's according to a post on social media attributed to the Simpson family. Our father, Orenthal James Simpson, succumbed to his battle with cancer, the post said. He was surrounded by his children and grandchildren. During this time of transition, his family asked that you please respect their wishes for privacy and grace. Simpson was acquitted of two counts of murder during a televised trial that gripped America, divided the country largely among racial lines. But the jury in a civil trial found Simpson liable for the double murder, and he later served 9 years in prison for his role in a botched armed robbery. He was granted parole in 2017. It completed a stunning fall from grace for the once celebrated running back who won the Heisman Trophy in 1968 while starring at the University of Southern California. At times, he looked unstoppable in the NFL, too, as a member of the Buffalo Bills who was inducted into both the College Football Hall of Fame and the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He capitalized on his athletic success in Hollywood, developing a career as a successful actor and TV pitchman. But it all came crashing down after the murder charges that riveted America. Next up, Fed's interpreter stole $16 million. Federal authorities charged the former interpreter for L.A. Dodgers star Shohei Ohtani with bank fraud for allegedly stealing more than $16 million from the two-time American League MVP's account. During a press conference, the government laid out its case against Ippi Muzahara, saying he transferred millions of dollars to an alleged illegal sports book to pay off debts, using Ohtani's baseball salary to fund his scheme. The bets do not appear to have been made on the sport of baseball, U.S. Attorney Martin Estrada said. Estrada said Mizuhara's bets were made between 2021 and 2024. Mizuhara set up the account for Ohtani and didn't have access to Ohtani's financial advisors. The $16 million in unauthorized transfers were from a checking account belonging to an MLB player identified in an affidavit as Victim A, which is Ohtani. Muzahara also used the same account to buy 1,000 baseball cards for $325,000 via eBay and a whatnot between January 2024 and March 2024. Mailed them to the Dodgers clubhouse under an alias. Authorities say they interviewed Ohtani last week. He denied knowing anything about the wire transfers after providing his cell phone to law enforcement. Officials said there was no evidence to suggest that Ohtani was involved or aware of the illegal activities. The 39-year-old Mizuhara faces 30 years in prison and a maximum fine of $1 million if sentenced under federal guidelines. Well, Caitlin Clark has been called the greatest of all time by Iowa fans, overrated by most other Big Ten fans, an alien by Diana Taurasi, a generational talent by Dawn Staley and Kim Mulkey, and just about every other superlative imaginable. But what do any of those descriptions mean when it comes to how her game will translate to the WNBA? Clark, who scored 30 points in her final college game, an 87-75 loss to South Carolina in the national championship, is expected to be taken number one by the Indiana Fever next Monday at the 2024 WNBA draft in Brooklyn. So Clark's going pro, and she's going to the Fever. In Indianapolis, Clark will team up with 2023 Rookie of the Year, Aaliyah Boston. All right, before we go, we'll take a trip around New England and see what some of the major state stories are. Here in Connecticut, Norwich, the Walgreens Distribution Center in Dayville is set to close May 17th, causing hundreds of people to lose their jobs. From Maine, if you live in Ogunquit and are looking to visit the world's best getaway this year, you won't have to travel far, according to Real Simple magazine. According to the publication, you're already there. In a list that includes London, the Greek islands, and Tokyo, Real Simple named Ogunquit the home of Marginal Way, Perkins Cove, and the Ogunquit Playhouse as the number one vacation destination of 2024. From Massachusetts, not easy being a kid is how Senator John Cronin summed it up earlier this week at the yearly legislative day held in the State House for the Massachusetts Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs. The dozens of Massachusetts legislators agreed on supporting line items in yearly budgets that direct funds to the alliance and signing on as sponsors of legislation that benefits the 40 clubs located in communities across the state. From New Hampshire, a bill that would change the process for banning books in schools opposed by author Jody Picoult recently passed the state Senate. From Rhode Island, the rebuilding of the famed Cliff Walk in Newport appears closer to reality following federal assistance announced on Monday. Senators Jack Reed and Sheldon Whitehouse, along with Congressman Gabe Amo, or Amo, announced that more than $16 million has been awarded to the state to fix and fortify the Cliff Walk. And from Vermont, construction for Champlain Street Park in Burlington broke ground at the end of March, kicking off the long-awaited improvements. For a small park, the project is years in the making, having begun January of 2020. And that's all we have time for today from USA Today, their weekend edition, April 12th through 14th. I thank you for listening and hope you have a great day.